Welcome to WeAreTechnology.com's User Friendly 2.0 with host Bill Sickens, Technology Architect.
And this is User Friendly 2.0. As always, I'm your host, Bill Sickens. Joining me, Bill Gretchen. Welcome to this week's show.
Hello.
To you and to our American listeners, I hope you all had a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday. And for everybody else, think of us as we now have to go on diets for the next 6 months. So here in the States, this is a holiday weekend, and it's, you know, kind of a nice break. And one of the things that's been unofficially adopted is the Friday after Thanksgiving's on Thursday, and Friday being kind of like a day to spend with the family. And so at least we get one a year now, which is better than none. All right. On that note, what do we have in the news this week?
Okay. Massively overthinking. How do we make better the MMORPG genre?
All right. So before anybody asks the question that doesn't know, that stands for massively multiplayer online role-playing game. Just ask Sheldon in Big Bang Theory. He explains it there. So what they're talking about here is this is a genre of game that has been really popular. World of Warcraft is a very, very well-known one. Before that, you had EverQuest and some other things like that. Ultima, I believe, had one. Final Fantasy is another one. That basically what it is you have an open world and you pay a monthly fee usually and go on and can do a lot of different things that usually is built up by your imagination. There's some limitations in these games, just because they are games, but for the most part, it is very much a real opportunity to be creative and get out there and do different things. They kind of hit their peak maybe 10, 15 years ago. And since then, while a lot of them are still out there, they've been kind of getting older and not really being updated as much. And then some of it's become kind of even toxic. One of the things that Blizzard Activision figured out when they were trying to deal with politics within the game that didn't work too well and almost destroyed it. Things like that. So what happens now? Is this a genre that's over with, or is it something that is going to be rebooted and made better? It seems like the latter is what's going on. And there's a lot of different ideas out there on how to deal with this properly. But the old system of basically issuing updates and different things like that just extended the storyline has become somewhat stale. So what they're doing now with some of them is actually flipping it up, changing it up a little bit. And I know that there's been a fear with the companies of, well, we're going to lose a lot of our players if we don't do something that is exactly the same. And I'm not going to give out a spoiler alert here, but do knowing firsthand on some of what's going on with this, the focus groups and different things have found that the changes actually are breathing new life into these games. And it was kind of time to keep the same characters. People are very happy with knowing what they're doing, where they're playing, the environment they're in, and that kind of a thing, but something new and something different to do. So some of the things that are being looked at is jumping the storyline ahead a couple hundred years in the mythology so that you have different things going on that uses the original storyline, but still, you know, has something new going along with it. So that's the really brief explanation of it. What is your guys' opinion on it? I don't know, Gretchen, if you've ever actually played these, Bill. I think you have.
I've never played them.
So
I've played WoW and a few.
What's your opinion of them?
I think that, like, at the stage now, they've stagnated pretty hard, for the most part. Some of them haven't. I think Final Fantasy has done well to keep itself going. But WoW was stagnating when I was playing it, and that was back at, Lich King era?
Yeah. I would agree with you on that. As a WoW player myself, I think they had some DLC and updates beyond that, but it seemed like this headline was saying it was just expanding on a storyline that had already pretty much been played out.
Yeah.
You know, so.
But I think there's a lot that can be done to bring new blood into it.
Yeah. So do you think the genre is over, or do you think it's just time for a reboot?
I think it's time for a look at it. Really just discover what's needed, and I don't know if subscription service is really what's going for it right now.
Yeah, well, everything's a subscription, and you get nickel and dime to death. If they're going to do that, they need to drastically lower the price to get more people involved, or come up with another, you know, way to monetize it. One company was actually looking at making the subscription free or very reduced, but you had all kinds of commercials in the game, and the focus groups on that company, needless to say, didn't think that would go over too well. So, you know, it's something that the big guys have to figure out and not be afraid to experiment a little bit. And I agree with you. I think as long as they are willing to do that and bring some new life into these things, people will enjoy them again and not get involved in politics.
Yeah. I think anytime you have entertainment that gets deeply entrenched in politics, you're just going to tear everything apart and it's going to rot. And that's, people go to these games or go to movies or stories to escape reality. They want something else. So
exactly. And that is very true. And the other thing with politics, it's part of the reason why we don't do it here. It's not that we don't have political opinions, but you're never going to have a situation where somebody's not mad at you. So unless it's absolutely necessary, like you're a politician, it's best to steer clear of that. I mean, there's no reason to jump into it if it's needed, but it's usually not. So,
yeah. In other news, Google boss says $1 trillion AI investment boom has elements of irrationality.
So Google's boss, Sander, had an interview with the BBC, which is where this comes from. And there's been a growing concern in the industry that AI is a bubble. And what that means is, if we think back to an example of this, the dot-com crash back in 1999, where there was a lot of speculation and a lot of investment. Nobody was verifying anything. Think Pixelon, look that up if you've never heard of it. It's an interesting story. These type of things were out there to a point where it just kind of blew up and a lot of money was lost. The basically reset, the internet didn't go away or anything, but going beyond that, there was a lot more supposedly focus and keeping things a little bit more real. Arguably with things like the metaverse and stuff, that hasn't been completely true, but for the most part, we haven't seen another 1999 again, except that we're worried about it, or the Wall Street basically is worried about this happening with AI. And there's a lot of speculative investment going on. I think it's a little different than 1999, but the thing of it is when you get into a situation where people are just throwing free money at things and investing and not really doing any due diligence and that type of a thing, then yeah, you can definitely have problems. So basically from the BBC story and Google, he was saying that if AI does crash, it's going to affect every company that's invested in it. Now, this doesn't mean AI would go away or anything like that, but it does mean that a lot of the money that's out there would evaporate. And I think to some extent, we're probably going to see at least a correction that is going to have this kind of a response just because of where everything is at. And you've got some other interesting things that are out there too. And one of them is how much electricity AI uses. That's not something we had with the dot-com bubble. And there are finite resources and they're going to have to figure out different ways. You know, fusion would be nice to be able to power these data centers without completely taxing and overloading power grids and, you know, creating pollution and all the rest of that.
All right, Smith and Diction rebrands Superhuman, formerly known as Grammarly.
Yeah, and when I saw this, I'm like, what, huh? What are you talking about, right?
Yeah, and I use Grammarly, so it's kind of like, oh, what does this mean?
Grammarly, for anybody that hasn't used it, is, in my opinion, a great AI tool that can be installed alongside things like Word, Google Docs, whatever, and as you're writing, will make suggestions, and you have the ability to customize what suggestions you wanted to make, and this can be anything from just, you know, being a really nice spell checker to suggestions. Gretchen, what is your experience? Just if you had to give a description of it.
Actually, I've had a really good experience. I'm really bad, basically, at the punctuation situation. I don't know what it is. And I've always been bad at spelling, too. So this has really helped me reevaluate how I'm constructing my sentences, realizing that I need commas in certain areas. And sometimes I take their suggestions and sometimes I go, you know what, the whole sentence needs to be redone.
Yeah.
But it's been helpful. And it's not like having an editor who's giving their personal emotional baggage with it.
I don't get the feeling the way you said that you've had this happen, but
the computer is very neutral.
Yeah. No, and it is, and it's not terribly invasive. You know, if you want to pause it, you can, all that kind of stuff. It's actually used by about 40 million people and is the most used application of this kind that's out there. And what's happened is you've had two companies that are getting together. Coda has been acquired, and they're creating a rebranded product that puts email and a number of other tools they had along with Grammarly together. Is a product called Superhuman. There is even a rumor that the AI suggested these names. So, you know, I don't know if that's true or not, but hey, it'd be kind of fun to think. I mean, it is possible. The avatar, which is now going to be used within Superhuman, that does the actual work, the AI, is being branded Hero. And to that end, you're going to have an actual, more interactive, animated, hopefully not like the paperclip from Microsoft or Bob or something, but actually something real that, is there to be able to give more of a quote human aspect to what it is doing. And the other thing that's coming along with this also is the ability to specify a lot more, like what kind of writing are you doing? Is it for business? Is it science fiction? Is it, you know, a paper for school, whatever. And it's able to advise based on that kind of input and learn from it and be able to build on top of that.
That's a really good point, because right now Grammarly is very business oriented. So I have to take the suggestions carefully, because when it's trying to change dialogue or suggest changes to dialogue, and I've got kids, all kinds of personalities, and I don't need everybody talking corporate.
Right.
Because that ruins the story. So, you know.
Costco and Home Depot still use IBM computers from the 1980s. Here's why.
Yeah, so this is kind of funny, and it's not just Costco and Home Depot. There's a lot of the bigger companies that do this, and our past host Jeremy used to work for Home Depot, and I remember talking about some things where they'd turn on a system, and it literally would be a green monochrome monitor coming up. Enter today's date, you know, running on like DOS 6 or something, and these are definitely still out there. One of the other operating systems that's really used on the mainframe side is AS400. This has been around forever. I've done a little programming for that in my career. And you look back and these computers are old and ancient and they still work and they can't be hacked. That's really the reason why. Ah. And it's kind of interesting to look at, because maybe not so much Home Depot, but a store like Costco, you can go in and buy the latest computers, equipment, you know, tablets, any of that kind of stuff. And the tablet they have, as far as computing power goes, is way more powerful than some of these systems. AS400 is pretty decent, especially for at the time, for doing large inventories and that kind of thing. But even so, what you get on the shelf could easily run circles around what's being used to sell it to you. But at the end of the day, the systems are either offline or on closed networks, which is why they say it can't be hacked. The only way to keep from being hacked, unplugged from the internet. In this case, they're able to successfully do that in a lot of these situations. So you're looking at things like that. The other part of it is the ability that you're using an ecosystem that already exists, so you're building on top of it. So changing out of some of these things would require, you know, moving to different stuff. But it's kind of funny when you're looking at, they go out for job openings and these kind of things, freelancers for maintaining some of these systems. And I remember looking at one that just came up about 6 months ago, and I think it might've been for Home Depot, that they needed a contractor to be able to come out and replace the Dallas clocks in their 286 motherboards. So in the day, to keep track of the time and date and settings, you had a physical battery. They didn't have NVRAM like we do now. And those batteries go dead. And when they do, your computer won't boot anymore. It can't find the hard drive. It doesn't know the date and the time, you know. And that was the way of things to be. And one of the bigger problems is because batteries corrode, that's causing a lot of problems. And I don't think that you can go to the local computer store, if there even still is one in your area, and buy a new 286 motherboard, right? So it is definitely unique in that respect. But as long as they're maintained properly, they do work and they're very stable and reliable. And again, don't have, you know, they're not susceptible to people getting in, hacking, that type of a thing. So a question might be asked, well, Home Depot's had hacked, so has Costco. But these are on the modern systems that are connected to the internet, things like credit card processing and that end of stuff, which uses new functionality, which does require those type of connections. So it's just interesting that, you know, we talked last week, I think it was, about COBOL and some of the old languages.
Mm-hmm.
And you're looking at the same kind of thing here. You know, what happens when you can't get the equipment anymore and that type of thing. And they're facing that. But the reality of the situation is that's why they still use what they use. Cool. All right. It's that time of year. It is holiday time again. And Gretchen, I, you know, every year you went with me the last 2 years, I have the pleasure of being able to give a presentation to a group here in Portland where I talk about the newest gadgets and different things that are out there, which means I have an excuse to buy them and look at them, right? So, so it's a lot of fun. And, you know, this type of thing is geared towards who you're buying for. Yeah, you know, here at User Friendly, we're going to cover more tech-oriented stuff, but there's a lot of interesting things to go out there, and it's actually worth going to a store and looking at and seeing what there is, because looking at these things side by side, there is a benefit to that. So one of the ones that I thought was really cool is a thing called Foldy Screen Pocket Display, and it's a 10-inch rollable OLED screen that's a tube the size of a travel mug, and you unroll it, and you have this nice big screen, you know, so it's, you're not having to squint at the small screen in your phone or whatever. Something like that is really kind of cool and seems almost sci-fi, you know. Another one that's a very useful gadget, and this isn't exactly new, but the version of it is the Smart Mug. Now, these came out 10 years ago, I think, initially as a Kickstarter or something. And then you can buy different versions of it. But the ones that are out this year kind of upgrade the game a little bit on that, in that you keep your drink at the exact temperature you choose. You set it, and it has the ability to warm or cool. And you also can integrate it with your smart home so that you can ask your smart home to turn on your mug and that kind of a thing. And it will even monitor your hydration habits and tell you if you haven't had enough liquid or have had too much liquid for the day. So
now, does it monitor what's inside of the mug?
You know, it can't like detect it automatically, but the app does have the ability to tell it what it is. Yeah. So anyway, but you know, it's just kind of a thing too. One of the things that's down my road that's coming out is the PixelCast. And this is a console game system that plays the old games like Atari, Sega, Nintendo. But there's a couple of things going on with this. If you're asking the question, well, there's a lot of these out there. Yeah, but this one's legal. So what it plays is actual, real, genuine stuff. It doesn't lag. It doesn't have problems. Everything works properly. And you're dealing with a situation where you don't have to worry about weird software. I still don't think Mario Goes to Jail is an actual licensed title for Nintendo. So, and it is on most of the, you know, let's just say behind the scenes consoles like this you would get from Alibaba or something. Interesting game, but... definitely from there. Another one, Gretchen, you might like is something called the NovaGlow Home Planetarium. And this is actually a planetarium that you can buy for your house. It's 4K. You put it in your living room. And it's a small version of the ones that we saw that we talked about earlier in the year that allows you to be able to have a home planetarium.
Are you talking about the blow up dome?
Yeah, it's a small version of that that's designed to go in your living room.
Oh, my goodness.
So before we jump into some of the other ones that are here that are kind of interesting, is there anything specific you guys are looking at that's you think is cool this year that's a gadget? Anything you would want on your Santa list? Okay, maybe not.
I haven't, you know, money's a little tight, so I've been like staying away from like looking at stuff, to be honest.
So... you know, it makes it kind of hard, I know, with that type of a standpoint. But I'm thinking, for me, cybernetic implant. You want to give me something, send me a cybernetic implant. I'll even talk about it on the air.
Oh, if we're going to go crazy, give me a jetpack.
I don't know how crazy that is. You know, we talked to the pilots here, and you and I are in the process of becoming one. So I think that might be a little more than a stocking stuffer, but hey, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, the fact that stuff like that exists is amazing still to me, you know. It just is. Yeah, some of the other things are wearables. There's a thing called the EcoHug heated scarf, and these type of things, wearable heated things, aren't exactly new, but there's a lot more of them this year. I've had the coat for a while that you charge off your cell phone and it actually warms up, so when it's really cold, that's nice. I've got the gloves now. There are other things like vests and stuff, and now they have a scarf. So you know, someone in your life that's really cold or something, this might be a kind of a neat thing.
Sounds like something for my mom.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm thinking too.
She'd wear it all the time.
And they're made from carbon fiber. One of the questions we got on some of the other ones is, can they be washed? Yeah, this is very much light washable, runs for about 8 hours on low. It does have a battery, and but it's not like real bulky or anything, you know. Now, this next one is one that I absolutely have to get because it's just something out of Star Trek, and it's a hollow note, sticky notes, like Post-it notes. And there's two ways to get these. One set works with your, you know, augmented glasses, like your augmented reality glasses and that type of a thing. But the other one that I've seen, I haven't been able to figure out where to buy it yet, but it's a cube that's actually a virtual reality thing. It sits on your desk. It looks like a Post-it note, and you can write on it and everything. But then it's got a 3D holographic thing on it to show it to you, and that you're able to interact with it and flip through and all that stuff. And of course, since it's electronic, it recognizes handwriting, so you can search and find things and whatnot. You put in a contact, you can hit a thing, it adds it to your contact list, all of that kind of stuff.
Okay, this sounds intriguing.
So it would probably be something that would save me having all the pieces of paper everywhere too. So environmentally, you know, good for that. So if you're wanting to buy me something, that certainly would be something I'd appreciate. And then the last one that I want to talk about, because this is a big deal with all of us, very much we support STEM education in our schools. Science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And as a part of that, there's a product called Science in a Box STEM Lab Kit in the 2025 version. And this is actually something that's great for the kids, that's they're going to enjoy, but they're also going to learn from. They're not real expensive. They start at about $100, and you can go a lot crazy if you want to get different things with it. But the basic one includes sensors, microcontrollers, wireless modules, student-friendly experiments, and so on. So back when I was growing up, you know, back in my day, I just turned 50. So back in my day, I can say that now. I had a thing from Radio Shack called an electronic project lab. And it was this thing with all these springs and wires. And it had different passive components like resistors and capacitors and switches and things. And even had a little microprocessor. And you would basically build your own circuits by putting wires between the springs to make it do different things. And that area, I thought that was really cool. Well, today it's full on microcontrollers. You can literally build in a STEM kit the same thing that exists in a device you might buy, like a, I don't know, we were talking kitchen gadgets and stuff earlier that makes those work, Raspberry Pi and Arduino or some of these that if you're familiar with them that are used in these type of situations. And this actually is something that comes in a kit and is something that is just available. I highly recommend them because they're really, really good for educating that. And to that end, at userfriendly.show, we have a list of some of these type of devices that we've talked about here, including the STEM kit. So you have one stop where you can go and check it out. And not that this is any kind of a plug, but if you do go through our website and buy something on Amazon, we get a little bit of a kickback. Same price for you. We just get a little bit of Jeff Bezos money. And I hear since he's changing jobs, you know, that might be a problem, but nevertheless, I am certainly not going to turn it down. And when you go to these things, it's just a way to be able to get in there and find us one shot. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Check out our website. Userfriendly.show is your one stop for submitting questions, checking out back episodes, and seeing what is new and exciting here at User Friendly. All right, we're going to be doing something that has been really liked by everybody, and please continue to send us your questions on this. It's something we enjoy recording, and that is our Comic Friendly 2.0. We're going to be talking Batman and Mr. Freeze. So with no further ado, let's go to Michael. Joining us now, Michael Regina, host of Comic Friendly 2.0 here on User Friendly and Read the Frickin' Comics on YouTube. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Hey, guys, how are you doing? It's been a minute.
It's been a minute. Yeah. It's always a pleasure. I'll tell you what, I enjoy talking, and so does the audience, because we always learn something kind of cool and new and everything like that. But with the weather getting colder, I understand we're going to freeze.
Yes. It is going to be very cold today. So right now We're going to be talking about Batman and Mr. Freeze today. So that is going to be our topic of discussion. And I thought it would be a perfect segue into this cold weather that we're having, at least on my neck of the woods. Yes, let's dive into it.
All right, Mr. Freeze, my favorite villain and the best villain in Batman, in my opinion. Let's see what you feel. Take her away.
No problem. So I wanted to start from the very beginning. So Mr. Freeze started out life in the comics industry as Mr. Zero. So Mr. Zero made his debut in Batman 121, February of 1959. He was created by Bob Kane, but also by writer Dave Wood and artist Sheldon Moldoff. Now, when he began his mad scientist ways, he was really just a sort of one and done villain. He kind of didn't have a background, didn't really have much that was about him, except that, of course, he had ice themed crimes. And he was typically freezing people left and right and had ice-themed weaponry. His look was very, very different from what many viewers may identify with Mr. Freeze. He had sort of an orange and red suit, and he did have the cryo suit that he usually wears. But he was known as Mr. Zero, and he really, you know, had a one-and-done take. He froze Batman and Robin, and was doing ice themed crimes. And we didn't hear much from Mr. Zero, beyond that. After a period of time, he, first started to be known as Mr. Freeze, believe it or not, in the 1966 Batman comic, TV show rather. So in the 66 series, they dubbed him Mr. Freeze. And that bled over into the comic. And so Mr. Freeze was played by three different characters in the 66 series, George Sanders, Otto Preminger, and Eli Wallach. Let's try that again. George Sanders, really? Otto Preminger, and Eli Wallach. Yeah, absolutely.
Really?
In the 66 series. Yes, yes, yes. So, really, really interesting. He had three different appearances, three different actors playing him, and it was there that he, you know, got his full fleshed out name. He started to be seen a little bit more in some of those comics during that period. Now, the 1970s is the Silver Age of comics, and it is a wacky, wild time in comics. Lots of oddball adventures, lots of really out there one-off adventures. There was a period of time where Mr. Freeze, made a deal with a demon, a half demon from hell, to exchange his ability, you know, to freeze things to get what's called cryokinesis, which is actually being able to manipulate cold and create cold characters and build things out of just from his mental powers. And so, you know, this kind of thing is really, really wacky and oddball. What really reinvented Mr. Freeze actually was the 1992 comic. I keep saying comic because comics are my life. The 1992 animated Batman show. Team of writers, Paul Dini and his team, Bruce Timm, they decided to change Mr. Freeze's backstory from just being a mad scientist who was exposed to some chemicals to actually having a thorough backstory, a very tragic one. And it was so impactful and effective that DC decided to retcon Mr. Freeze's entire backstory and use the backstory from the animated show, which is kind of really rare. So from becoming a mad scientist, what they did was they changed it to Mr. Freeze was a cryoscientist, exploring different ways to freeze and unfreeze human beings to preserve them in case there is, you know, some form of disease that they could not recover from, to keep them alive for a period of time. There's different takes on the story, but usually the story involves Mr. Freeze trying to cure a disease from the love of his life, Nora. She contracts a very incurable disease, and Mr. Freeze obviously freezes her. And during the process of trying to find a cure for her, the accident occurs, which turns him into this villainous character. He is typically trying to, his crimes usually involve theft to raise money to continue his research to help his dying wife. Even though she is cryogenically frozen, he wants to be with her again. Now, there's been lots of variations on that theme, but that's basically been his backstory since 92, moving forward. And it really is a tragic one. It's what makes Mr. Freeze kind of an enduring character, because it might sound like a gimmick, and there is a lot of cold and ice themed villains and heroes in comics, but Freeze actually is quite a tragic character, and he's treated as such basically from 92 onwards. It's really, really sort of a unique type of character. I mean, as far as Batman's rogues are concerned, I think maybe Clayface and a few others have this kind of tragic mentality to them, where they're just not sort of evil for evil's sake, which, you know, the Joker would be something like that, or, you know, something where they have a nefarious schemes all the time, this kind of thing. He does have his schemes, but of course they are done with a purpose, right? So in 2011, of course, DC revamped their entire line of comics. They dubbed it the New 52. And they also changed Freeze a little bit and changed his origin story a little bit. In the New 52 version of Mr. Freeze, he is a scientist working at the Wayne Foundation on cryogenically freezing people. And one of his case studies is a woman named Nora, who isn't his wife at this time, but she is cryogenically frozen because she has an incurable disease, and she's been frozen for almost 80 years now at this point. He becomes sort of obsessed with trying to cure her. And Bruce Wayne, who is the head of the Wayne Foundation, of course, is quite disturbed by his behavior, and he cancels the project or takes Freeze off of it. In a fit of rage, Freeze, you know, destroys his lab, and that's when he gets doused with his chemicals and becomes this full-fledged Mr. Freeze. So a slight change, not too drastic, but effective nonetheless, right? Of course, after New 52, DC reapplied their existing universe. It's a whole story in itself that we can talk more about. Where they then retconned the retcon and, you know, brought things back to normal. Freeze actually appears in what's known as the Absolute Universe for DC, which is more recent continuity. The Absolute Universe, if you guys aren't familiar, is kind of a really, really, I wouldn't say dark and brooding, but it is. It's really engaging.
It's dark. It's dark.
An absolute hit with the fans. It's consistently been one of the number one comics every month. Absolute Batman. They have a few series out. Absolute Batman, Wonder Woman, Superman, Green Lantern, Martian Manhunter, and so on. The Mr. Freeze of that universe is called Victor Freeze Jr., or Victor Freeze Jr. Some people call his last name, some people pronounce his last name as Freeze. He was exposed to a prehistoric bacterium preserved in ice, which mutated his entire body, right? He doesn't wear a bulky cryo suit. Instead, he actually becomes this lanky, monstrous figure with red eyes, pale blue skin, and ice in his veins. And if you've seen Freeze in the Absolute Universe, you would get chills. Similar to the Joker in the Absolute Universe, it is quite frightening. It's not for little kids, that's for sure. But that version of Freeze is really terrifying. And so that's kind of like the evolution. I know I jumped around, you know, skipped much of the Silver Age, the silly season, I would call it. But Freeze has been a part of Batman since almost day one. So he's definitely deserving of that rogues gallery status. He's definitely on that Mount Rushmore of Batman's rogues for sure.
You know, it's interesting. I think Batman, more so than a lot of others, we've seen a lot of changes just as it's developed from the original TV show that was kind of campy. I liked it, but, you know, that's talked about with the bang, boom, crunch and all of that mm-hmm. stuff. And there was always something on Batman's belt to fix whatever the problem was.
Yeah.
It seems like it has gone down a path of getting darker and darker and darker, not just with Mr. Freeze, but the whole thing. And what you were talking about there is interesting because you look at just some of the artwork from that and it's like, oh boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. The last series that you mentioned, I haven't seen any of that. So that's come as a big surprise. My idea of Mr. Freeze was the 92 version.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's funny. I mean, ever since Denny O'Neill, maybe in the 80s, of course the Tim Burton films as well in the late 80s, they kind of revamped Batman, took it out of that campy phase. Again, the 60s into the 70s was definitely camp for Batman and Superman and most of DC. But then, it got kind of dark and brooding, right? The animated show, which I recommend everyone watch because it is absolutely wonderful, added to that mystique, right? Brought it to life in many ways. It was so great. The mooding, the stories, the animation, and the absolute universe is kind of pushing the envelope there and sort of reinventing these characters. And I think people are really, really gravitating towards those stories. Just because it's fun and different, you know, we know it's not established continuity. This isn't the Batman. It is just one angle, one universe, one story that we're telling. So I think it's a lot of fun. People really seem to be enjoying them for sure.
You know, and I think that's one thing about the whole superhero thing, because it's easy to change your universe when you need to. Your stuff doesn't get stale and you don't have that ability in a lot of other franchises. But, you know, you look around and see all the stuff that's going on, and we've talked Iron Man and Superman and stuff passing this year and seen kind of the same type of thing. So it's not just DC. I mean, Marvel does it too. And you know, it's nothing that unusual, but it does seem like it gets a reboot. What would you say, about once every 20 years or so?
I would say even less these days. Once every 10 years. There's either a full continuity reboot or an event that takes, you know, for an entire year, that takes over for a year. And then is reset, that kind of thing. I think publishers are looking to have stories that are gripping, that are interesting, but they also know they've built these archetypes that people don't really want you to mess with, right? So nothing is ever permanent in comics. People do not, you know, nobody ever really dies in comics, that kind of thing. But very rarely do you see Batman is now evil and he's going to be evil forever now. It doesn't really work that way, right? There's always this, like, this very easy thing to say in this continuity, Batman is evil. And what does this world look like? And it's fun to play in those areas, right? But not if you stamp it as this is a de facto change, right? I think DC learned that from the Crisis on Infinite Earths back in the 80s, where they grouped everything together. They wanted to get rid of some of these titles that, you know, they had so many different titles running concurrently that they wanted to bring it all together. They did so in a definitive way, but they ended up reversing that, you know, maybe 20 years later, right? And just saying, oh no, the multiverse is still there and all these stories. So I think it's fun to play in these little different universes from time to time.
Well, you know, you need the person you're rooting for to win, at least ultimately at the end of the day. I would be all for, you know, a movie or a series where the enemy wins or the bad guy wins a little while and then it comes back around. It'd make a great cliffhanger. But at the end of the day, you want that. And I think we experienced that. Some of the feedback on Avengers Civil War, people didn't like that because of what they were doing. And The Flash is another one where in the multiverse or whatever they did on that, which looks an awful lot like Portland, Oregon here. had the same type of thing where he ran into the evil version of himself. And I don't know. It just seems like the fans, you got to have some continuity, you know?
I think so. I think so as well. And I think, when we're talking about The Flash, I think there was a lot more that was a problem with that film than just the plot, but I can understand that. These bad guy characters sometimes.
90% of the audience would agree with you on that. I was trying to be kind.
understandable. But, you know, it's interesting. Yes, it is fun to play in those worlds. But like I said, don't mess with the archetypes, right? Don't mess with like the basics of what this is, of what the, you know, especially the trilogy, the Trinity rather, of Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. Like, don't mess with who they are as the core of a person. But yeah, play around with that, or have them go through, you know, a crisis or moments in their lives where things change. Civil War was interesting because it's like, oh, mom and dad are fighting. I don't really like that too much, right? But I mean, it all depends on the type of audience that is watching it, what kind of fan you are. If you can set that aside for a bit and just have some fun, you'll see your characters fighting each other. But it all ended up doing pretty well. Spoilers for anyone who didn't, you know, watch the Marvel saga so far.
No, I think at this point we can talk about it. If anybody hasn't seen it, though, it's worth checking out. I mean, the movies were good. And, you know, I don't know. It's like Marvel does the movies better, and DC does the TV series better. I don't know what it is about that, but it just seems to be the case. You know, it's like the same thing. Get an even number version of Windows?
Exactly. Yeah. Or like every other Star Trek film is better. The even numbers are better than the odd numbers or whatever. But yeah, I think DC is definitely landed really, really strong with their animation unit. I you know, on a Saturday afternoon, there's a channel that we have here where they're typically playing a DC animated film, and that's always just worth a watch, you know, even if I've seen it before. Because they're fun, they're interesting. They've told all kinds of stories. There's Flashpoint, there's Doomsday, there's all kinds of different stories that they've done that really work well in animation. And the voice cast, the animating, the art, all that kind of stuff is really, really good. So, I definitely recommend checking those out. And you know, Marvel definitely has nailed the, at least for a while, for their, you know, the good first phase, they were running really strong, tight storytelling. Everything led to something. They've kind of lost their way a little bit. The quality of the films, I think, are still good, but they're not as cohesive in telling a story as maybe as they were. But I think that was almost the plan, because I think they felt people were feeling the need to do homework before going to see a movie or going to see a new TV show. They're saying, well, do I have to watch all 27 or whatever it is previous films before I can get into this one? I think they wanted to break that a little bit. That kind of did them a disservice a little bit. But I don't know, like, the jury's kind of still out right now, whether as people like that strict continuity and tight storylines, or if each film can live on its own. I think there's positive and negatives to each.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the mark of good storytelling is the...
I actually had a Marvel film that I was disappointed in, and that was, Captain Marvel. That was the first Marvel film that I was bored. And not most fine. Of the time I was really, I can't remember the plot line of the story, but all the others, I can pretty much, you know, recall things, events happening, but I don't know what it was about that one. I was really disappointed. So, you know,
yeah, we left Thor Love and Thunder with a bad taste in our mouth, and it's too bad.
Because, I haven't seen that one.
You know, I didn't care for that one either. It was too different. I think, you know, if they had done that storyline with new characters, it would have been fine. But the way it was presented using existing, I don't know. I just walked out of there like Star Wars 9, like, what just happened, you know?
Oh, yeah, I haven't seen that one. So that one is kind of huh? Nah. Okay. Yeah. So what did you think about the Fantastic Four most recent one?
I liked it. I loved the universe, that whatever universe we're in, and what I think it was Earth 288, I believe, or 822. I forget what it was called. But I actually loved it. I loved the style. I loved the storyline, and it was, you know, it did what it needed to do, right? It told a story. It brought in such a big character like Galactus, I mean, literally and figuratively, extremely large character. I liked that this world was modern, but also had this retro feel to it. And that the world was not filled with superheroes. Like, the Fantastic Four were the superheroes, right?
Yeah.
And they were so confident in being able to do anything. They weren't cocky about it, but they were very confident in, like, hey, we will take care of you. And then they come across something that absolutely they could not handle, right? At least until the end. I honestly thought the film was It had a happy ending. I thought it was going to have a more down ending. I honestly thought that they would actually, so spoilers for anyone who's seen this, hasn't seen it, I thought they would actually fail in their mission and Earth would get destroyed and they would be forced to come to Earth 616 of Marvel and then warn everyone about, you know, Galactus coming or something like that. But it had a more upbeat ending than what I thought. But I did like it very much so. How did you find it?
I actually enjoyed it. And I'm not really a Fantastic Four fan or have much knowledge about the group. I just remember that it was always the big guy was unhappy and the brother was always doing something stupid. And I'm glad they stepped away from that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it was, like I said, yeah, told those great stories. I think everyone played their roles well. I'm interested to see where it's going to go. Dr. Doom is a big villain, right? And some of the rumors I'm hearing are pretty insane of what they're filming right now for Doomsday, and they're filming the next one after that as well. So it's pretty epic sounding, whatever is going to come about it. But yeah, I'm really interested for sure.
Now that's great. All right, well, send in your questions as always, userfriendly.show, and check out Read the Frickin' Comics on YouTube. Both amazing things to deep dive into these subjects. And I'll tell you what, but Michael, before we started doing this, you know, comic books, I liked them, but it wasn't since we've started doing this, I've had a much bigger appreciation for a lot of the stories and stuff, and I've kind of gone back and checked it out. And I don't know, I appreciate it more than I used to. So it's nice having backstories.
That's amazing. That's great. That's what I love. I do believe comics are meant to be read. Yes, you can get some really nice comics framed, but if you buy a comic, it's to read it and not just frame it and look at the cover. Enjoy those stories. There's so much to tell. Every day I'm adding I have a little YouTube short where I'm telling a fun story, a fact, some kind of character. And it's just never ending. It's a well that keeps on giving. So definitely check it out.
All right. Well, until next time, let us know what you think about Mr. Freeze. Michael, thank you.
Thank you very much, guys.
You know, Batman has been a kind of a love-hate relationship with me over the years, although the new Mr. Freeze I'm going to love. I already know that. But it's kind of interesting to talk about, you know, like what Michael was bringing up about how these things change, the seasons or the universes rather change and all of that kind of thing, and to see how they go forward with it. And from what my understanding is the Mr. Freeze movie that will be coming up is kind of a hybrid of some of these things. So the Mr. Freeze character in there picks up the best parts of a lot of the different past parts of the Batman genre. Until next week, this is User-Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
Hey everybody, this is Bill Snodgrass. Join User Friendly in supporting the people of the Ukraine with President Zelensky's United 24 campaign. Help is needed with healthcare, demining, and many, many other things. You decide where your support goes. Go to userfriendly.show and click the Ukrainian flag at the bottom of the homepage for more information.
User Friendly 2.0 copyright 2013 to 2025 by User Friendly Media Group Incorporated. All rights reserved. Content is the opinion of the show's participants and not necessarily this station or platform. Requests for material use, interviews, CCPA, privacy notice for California residents, GDPR information for UK and EU residents, and any other feedback may be submitted at userfriendly.show. We welcome your input. Thank you for listening.